You're listening to a Rhino.com podcast. Yes, you are.
Hi, this is Robin Gibb of the Bee Gees, and you're listening to the RhinoCast.
Hi, this is Ron Shapiro. Joining us here today on the RhinoCast, legendary composer, a master of the great American songbook, Mr. Burt Bacharach. Burt, it's a pleasure to have you here today. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me here, Ron. Appreciate it.
Well, we're going to cover some of the obvious questions that, you know, I'm sure you've answered a thousand times. But there's one thing that's been in my mind probably since the first few songs that I heard of you from you in the 60s. You use a lot of French horn or muted trumpet, and it's kind of like a herald or an announcement. You know what I mean? Now, because you wrote the music and not the lyrics up until recently.
Exactly.
Was the use of the horn the way to put a voice in the music, or why those instruments?
Well, that's a good question interesting one. It is an expressive when I'm, you know, dealing without a voice and dealing with an instrument. Flugelhorns were very appealing to me, just the way they could articulate. I mean, you've got usage and walk on by. You know, it's just I can remember writing like dummy lyrics on trumpet parts on a record date. You know. I mean, just words that really didn't make sense. But instead of having like an eighth note, a quarter note, an eighth note, and another just written in pure music notation, underneath I'd write a lyric that would just say, you know, it could be, I'll be holding on, you know? Okay. Now, musically, trumpet player would play it, bah, dun, dun, dun. But if I ask him to sing, you know, into his horn. I mean, they used to look at me like I was crazy. You know, they say, "Jesus, what is with this guy?" But you know, just like a phrase like "holding on." I mean, if I was to notate that, it would be a quarter note and 2/8 notes. Dun dun dun. But there's only one way you're really going to phrase that when you got words. You play "holding on." So I just asked him to sing it, and nobody taught me how to do that. Nobody guided me that way. It just felt right. It was a good instrument. You know, I felt that saxophones sometimes were great. I got into pieces where I've used an oboe as a... It just doesn't have the bend. It doesn't have the undercut. So, yes, you're right, Ron. It is a signature. Not intentional. Nothing's ever intentional, really.
But it's carried through your whole career pretty much, because even on the new album with the muted trumpet, through a lot of it, I almost get the same feeling that at the end of What the World Needs Now is Love, where it's the
it's a baritone
horn, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you notice you'll hear very little trombone from me, but a baritone horn, yes, on What the World Needs Now is Love. It just felt right. Felt right for the... I think each song, each piece of music warrants... whatever I'm hearing in my head, you know. I didn't know how the new album at this time would be structured instrumentally. You know, I don't have... It's always been the way I've written, which is everything gets out of the same bed, you might say. The music gets written as music is being written, or whether it's a song, whether it's a longer piece. I am also hearing what that orchestra might be playing, the orchestration, what's going on behind, where the strings come in, how they're going to be voiced. So they're kind of born at about the same time. I mean, fortunately for me, you know, I've studied music, learned how to notate, learned how to orchestrate, and keep learning how to orchestrate, you know. I mean, I think some of the orchestration that I've written on this new album is, you know, some of the best orchestration I've ever done. But that's the way it's supposed to be. You're supposed to get better as you do things, not stay the same and not get worse, hopefully. I mean, the album I did before 2 years ago with Ron Isley, where they were basically remakes of all these standards, like of mine and Hal's, with two new songs, were really kind of like, you know, I had to reinvent. I didn't want to do the look of love yet again, or this guy's in love with you, but or raindrops keep falling on my head. But with Ronnie Isley, you know, you sit in a room and Ron says, I want to do raindrops. I said, geez, I've done it. But, you know, I just played one bar for him, one chord, and he just went, raindrops keep falling on my head. They keep falling on my head. That's just the first bar. And you just suddenly say, hey, I got the clue. I see where it is. It's totally soulful. We'll make a very soulful record out of this thing. So you kind of go with where the music takes you and not try to pre-plan it. The very interesting thing on the new album with the Dr. Dre drum loops, you know, starting from the, you know, we got five drum loops on the new album. And then, you know, one from Prince Board of the Black Eyed Peas and the rest out of Dre's factory, you know. And Dre just gave me seven drum loops. He said, see what you can come up with. And I, you know, it formed the basis core of, you know, because it would be drums and bass most of the time. And where you go with that. And that kind of says, every four bars, it's the same four bars. We're not going to change that. Same chord structure, same drum pattern. Now, the challenge is write a melody over that. And then have a melody and then hear where it takes you orchestrally. And in this case, with this new album, it took me to places where suddenly, all right, out of the blue, here come voices singing what I felt about this time, and at this time is a very political album in a way, you know.
Absolutely.
If I've done the album 4 months ago, 5 months ago, it would even be more political. It was done pre-Katrina. It gets done when you think it's done, and you just have no way to know that the worst is still to come. And I mean, I believe this CD. I have a lot of passion about it. I care a lot about it. I'm very proud of the heritage, my music that's been written, the backlog, all the older songs. This new album means an awful lot to me because, you know, I got two young kids. There's a cut on the album called Where Did It Go? And I'm trying to describe how it felt growing up in New York City and what I could do and the freedom I had. And now having two young kids, a son who just, you know, is late teens, now has turned 20. And what future lies ahead for them? To have won a Grammy for this particular album this year, that was, it was the sixth Grammy, I think, sixth. But the one that means the most to me, because my peers sort of just said, we support you. Then I've been out on the road for 3 months, you know, doing concerts. Mm-hmm. What I try to do is be, I know why that audience is there, whether I'm playing in North Carolina or in Florida. I know they're there to hear The Look of Love and Raindrops and Alfie and How's Not Home. And you never want to cheat an audience out of what they came to hear, you know. But I do still do new stuff from the album. It's great. Nobody's thrown anything on stage yet.
Well, if they're a fan of yours anyway, they would, you know, being that the new stuff, even though, you know, you've written the lyrics for the very first time, it seems
I wrote the lyrics, co-wrote the lyrics with Tony O'Kay.
Okay. Okay. But let you get comfortable there. A fan is going to be a fan. And, you know, if you like the old stuff, you're going to love the new stuff just as I did. And
well, I, you know, listen, I know you're not going to, not everybody's going to feel like you. I mean, I remember when the record was first coming out and there was an article in the LA Calendar section on the front page about my feelings and why I made the album. And I had a private date to play, very lucrative date. Very wealthy people, a birthday party, only about 80 people, you know, one of those private dates. And the guy canceled me.
Because of the
my policies. Political views, yeah. And I can't tell you, you know, I'm not allowed to say what state or what city it was. But I'm very proud he got canceled, you know. I mean, it really – and
it's not like you really needed his check that week anyway, right?
Yeah. Well, he wanted his original deposit back on top of it, and he wanted me to pay for the act that was going to have to replace me because
you didn't cancel him.
No. We weren't going to do. And you know, he wanted me, as I say, pay for the new act. And I think the funny thing is that he tried to get Diana Krall, see, to take my place. Which would be just as bad as having me, because Diana's married to Elvis Costello. And
who's on your new album?
Elvis is on the album. And, you know, I mean, on the original cut, the way we made it on Who Are These People, Elvis sings at the end. See, we got to make a change or we're all fucked. And nobody has ever said fucked. And so emotional, like Elvis. Mm-hmm. And I told Elvis, I got the phone call from the record company. They didn't want to go with it, that we weren't going to get, you know, it would preclude our chances of getting into Kmart or anything like that. And I said, we're not going to get in Kmart anyway, you know, I mean. But I went with them. They said, you're saying enough on the lyrics of Who Are These People? You know, who are these people that keep telling us lies? How do these people get control of our lives? And who'll stop the violence because it's out of control? Make them stop. But, you know, there is a download, apparently. The record is out now.
I was just going to mention that. Yeah, X-rated. You can get it, yes.
Yeah, you can get the X-rated version, which has that change at the end. So I'm glad it's out there, you know. Elvis is glad that it's out there. But, you know, as far as you're saying, well, everybody's going to love it. Not necessarily, you know. I remember when it did come out, as well as getting canceled from the from the party. And we went back and offered to say, hey, we won't do anything from the new album. We'll just play the old songs. Because all his friends knew I was coming.
Mm.
80 people. People that were invited knew that I was coming. Okay, what's the reason going to be that I'm not playing? Did I have a conflict? Was I sick? No. You got to tell the truth or we don't have a deal here, you know. I don't know what I intended to do. Sue for stamping on artistic freedom, you know. Mm. But And when the record came out, I remember my son Oliver showing me, you know, some of the mail that was coming in on the internet. One guy said, "I can't wait for this album to come out so I can pee on it." So, jeez. You see, not everybody feels the same way.
No, I guess not. But anyway, getting back to the
one last thing.
Sorry. Oh, go ahead, please.
One last thing that, you know, as far as a sound bite, I thought of it. I won the Grammy. I had Oliver and Raleigh, my two kids, with me. I went through the press line, and the constant question was, why would you make an album like this after a lifetime of writing love songs and never rocking the boat and never being political, Bert? Why? And I said, I always had trouble with a girlfriend who lies. I've always had trouble with an agent who lies. And I'll always have trouble with a president who lies.
And wow.
That says it all. And I mean it with all my heart.
Thought I'd feel this way, and as far as I'm concerned, I'm glad I got the chance to say that I do believe I love you. And if I should ever go away, well then close your eyes and try.
For more with Burt Bacharach, log on to rhino.com. This legendary songwriter tells about working with Dionne Warwick, Gene Pitney, and taking it to the limits. Take a short quiz and enter to win a signed Burt Bacharach box set at rhino.com. Thanks for listening. Now, stay tuned for Bob Lefsetz and the Lefsetz Letter.
Tonight on Mysterious Happenings, we will explore a stretch of Danish coastline, which has served as a site of many shipwrecks over the last half century.
Foghorn sound.
Also on the program this evening, the harrowing account of an international soccer riot, which moved quickly from humorous to horrifying.
Crowd noises.
Wait, why are you saying that? Where are the actual sound effects?
I just did them. Are your cans working?
No, I mean the actual sound of a foghorn and noises from a large crowd.
That's what I did.
No, you didn't.
Sir, I'm a professional.
Professional loon.
I suggest you withdraw that egregious slight immediately.
Never.
Well then, you leave me with no choice. The sound of people clapping.
Up with the sun, gone with the wind. She always said I was lazy. Leaving my home, leaving my friends, running when things get too crazy. Out to the road, out beneath the stars, feeling the breeze, passing the cars. Women have come, women have gone, everyone trying to cage me. Yeah. Some were so sweet, I barely got free. Others, they only enraged me. Sometimes at night, I see their faces. I feel the traces they've left on my soul. And those are the memories that make me a wealthy soul. Tell you, those are the memories that make me a wealthy soul. Traveling man.
Does that sound good or what? 30 years later, it's Bob Lefsetz on the RhinoCast. We're here every week on Tuesday afternoon. We debut a new show. I'll leave that little mistake right in there. Shows I can't really pronounce debut that well. And that's what broke Bob Seger.
Traveling Man. That segues into Beautiful Loser. I'm going to play where it segues into Beautiful Loser just because it's so fucking good. Sit here and spin tunes for the next 20 minutes. They sound so good. I was not a huge fan, but you know, it used to be different. We used to be addicted to the radio in 1976, and AOR suddenly went on Bob Seger's Live Bullet. You know, he was back on Capitol Records. He put out this studio album, Beautiful Loser. Of course, no one cared whatsoever. That particular song, and then ultimately Nutbush, City Limits, whatever, infected radio. The reaction was unbelievable. Then he came out with the Night Moves album, and Bob Seger was a superstar, an interesting superstar. I mean, unfortunately, as time went on, Bob became more ballad-heavy. It was no more Hollywood Nights. But he married someone. It didn't work out. Then he got married again and retired. It's almost like he said, I slept in enough buses. I want to have a real life. Doesn't make albums, doesn't go on the road. Supposedly he is making an album, but it's been many years. But my focus today or tonight, depending on when you're listening, is not Silver Bullet, the live double Bob Seger album, but back in 72, one of the many, I think it's seven albums that Bob cut before he finally broke. Can you imagine that happening in today's record business? People who are superstars don't get to make seven records. But he went to Warner Brothers, which was the hippest label in the early 70s, and he cut this album, and it got great reviews. I was a dedicated reader of Rolling Stone, and they said this album was good. But you had a limited amount of money. It wasn't, and I talk about this all the time, it wasn't like today with P2P. We said, well, I hear about something, I'm going to check it out. The only way you could hear the stuff is you buy it. And he said, I'm not going to spend my $4 on that because there are other albums in the hierarchy. But I went to Sam Goody in Westport, which is on the Post Road. That was a big thing when Sam Goody finally came to Westport. I lived in Fairfield, next town over, but I went there. I was like, you know, their most loyal customer. And that's one of the problems you have being a loyal customer of a vinyl record store, because there's no such thing as a perfect vinyl record. They're warped. They skipped. I mean, at what point do you bring them back? If they skip, you bring them back. But if they have surface noise, you know, so I would bring back like 10 or 15% of the records. And after a couple of years, people say, you can't buy records from us anymore. And I say, well, I'm buying so many records. It's like, you know, if I'm buying 100 records in a year and I'm returning 15, you know, the average person is buying 3 records in a year. And that was one of the great things about the CDs coming out. You never had to return them. But I was there in Sam Goody, and one of the things we used to do was we used to go through the cutout bin. What exactly is a cutout? You originally meant it's cut out from the catalog, which one would consider to be the list. That may be too vague for you, that major labels have. But basically, it means they're not making it anymore. It ultimately varied. A lot of times, they had overstock, and they would sell them at a discount. And the way you would know you had a cutout was it would literally have a cut on the corner of the album. Okay, and that, but it was not called cutout because of that cut, although I used to think for years, because it was cut out of the catalog. And in this particular case, these records were sent one way. What it means is usually they were not purchased from the distributor themselves. One guy would buy millions of records, and he would sell them in large lots to record stores, and record stores would have to take everything. They couldn't cherry pick. So you'd have to go through hundreds and hundreds of albums in the store trying to look for the one good one. I think, you know, eventually they had to give away or throw away some of these records because nobody would want them. And I'm just graduating from college and my life sucks. I remember maybe it was this one I bought Yes Songs. The same day it was on the wall in the back there. Sam Goody, of course, is no longer there. Carol Reed, the ski shop right behind it, I don't think is there either. But I'm looking through, and I've got this Move record, which had Message to the Country and California Man long before ELO had a hit with California Man and Do Ya. They had the hit actually with Do Ya. And they ruined it. They put that middle there. The original version by the Move is raw and doesn't have that. Less studied. Usually the first version is always best. And I find this album back in 72. And I'm going to save the quintessential element in that album. I'm going to start with something so obscure that you won't believe it. Now, one of the things is this album has never come out on CD. If you investigate on the internet, they say that Bob himself doesn't like his vocals. If you listen hard enough, maybe you can get his viewpoint compared to other things. But until I read that, I never noticed that. But this is the initial track from back in 72. Now, I agree with you. You may not need to own that, but on some level, Bob was flailing. What does he do? Does he cover songs? Does he have originals? And I'm going to play you one of the originals, title cut. And when you buy a cutout album, you don't spend as much time as you do with one of the major records. What you do is you play both sides because you figure if it's cut out, maybe it's not really that good, and you get addicted to certain songs. This is the title track back in 72. Back in 72. You hear the record once, you keep singing in your head, back in 72. 35 years later, I'm still singing back in 72. Doesn't it remind you of a bar in the 70s? Can't you see the jukebox in the corner? You're wearing your bell bottoms. You've had a couple of beers. You're getting up the gumption to go talk to some girl. Back in 72. That is the music. And I think they're still playing that kind of music in the bars in the middle of America, despite what we're hearing on the airwaves, on Clear Channel stations, on an MTV. I'm going to play you another Seeger original. Because you haven't heard most of these songs, I'm going to expose you to some of this stuff. This is called So I Wrote You a Song.
I woke up with this feeling. There was something I needed to say. So I wrote you a song. Lately, girl, I've been dreaming. Dreaming about you all.
Okay, now we're going in for the kill. One of my treasured CD packages is the Free Anthology. I bought Free's Fire and Water because I had to own All Right Now. That's one of those records you just had to own. I know the album. I know Mr. Big. I never really loved it. But of course, when the band morphed into Bad Company, huge Bad Company fan. I don't know why Bad Company doesn't get props today. Now, I know Paul Rodgers with Queen, it's kind of scary, but the original Bad Company, and I've done a podcast about even one of their later records, really great shit. And then, of course, also as cutoffs, I bought Backstreet Crawler. There were two albums, if I remember correctly, by Paul Kossoff, the guitarist. This stuff, this guy is one of the unheralded heroes. If we ever go back to a blues rock era, they're going to dig this guy up and they're going to go, this guy was unbelievable. And I didn't realize it until I got this free anthology. And I had this, you know, I have my stereo, which I don't really use much because I just use my computer speakers now, to my right when I work on my computer. And I literally looked at the stereo and go, that guitar sound is unreal. A song called The Stealer. And then when I got in my head, you try to download the different tracks from back in 72. I hadn't played the album in so long. I hadn't played the albums from the 70s because then I, you know, I left home after being a senior in college. And you know, I went to college away, but over the summer I bought records. And then most of my records stayed with my mother's house in Connecticut until she moved into a condo. And they were only shipped to me like a couple of years ago. So I said, oh, man, I'd love to hear back in 72. So I went on the P2P service to get all this stuff. And I look up online what the tracks are, because you have to know what to look for. And I see Stealer. And I say, written by Andy Fraser and Paul Rodgers? You mean the Freeze or Freeze Stealer? And you probably haven't heard Freeze version. And Bob does an amazing take on it. So this is Stealer. Listen, if you like that, even go on iTunes right now and pay a buck. I'm against iTunes because I believe P2P should be licensed, and buy the free version of Stealer. I assume it's up there. Just the sound of the guitar of Paul Kossoff will blow your mind. And now I come to the piece de resistance. As I told you with these cutout albums, you played them once looking for that one gem. And at the end of the first side, I heard a gem that used to be unbelievably obscure. This is kind of a treat for you to hear this on my podcast today. However, as a result of P2P, it is somewhat available. But this version of this song was never played on the radio. It was never sold on a CD. And what I'm talking about is the legendary track, which is also on Silver Bullet, but is also done by Metallica. Turn the Page. Maybe the greatest song about the loneliness of the road by a rock star. This is the original studio version. You know what it's like to be sitting in your house where your parents lived after not living at home for so long as you're being in college, feeling completely alienated and hearing the sound of this record? Anyway, here's Turn the Page.
On a long and lonesome highway east of Omaha, you can listen to the engine moaning out his one note song. You can think about the woman or the girl you knew the night before. But your thoughts will soon be wandering the way they always do when you're riding 16 hours and there's nothing there to do. And you don't feel much like riding, you just wish the trip was through. Here I am on the road again. There I am on the stage. Here I go playing star again. There I go. Turn the page.
Is that world weary or what? Now, I got to say, the Silver Bullet version from Live Bullet is unbelievable. And I love the Metallica version. But this is like the guy played some shithole nobody came to, and he's sitting in his hotel room, and he's playing the number. Almost as if the only person he's even going to listen is his girlfriend. And you can hear that in the track. You only had to hear it once. Let's hope that Bob Seger hears this podcast and that they release back in 72 on CD so people can hear some of this great stuff. Till next week on the Rhinocast, it's Bob Lefsetz.
Log on to rhino.com to purchase CDs, DVDs, and digital downloads related to this podcast. Available titles include The Look of Love, the Burt Bacharach Collection, and the very best of Burt Bacharach. Burt's new studio album, At This Time, as well as Bob Seger's Back in 72, can be purchased in the Rhino.com extended store. New and recent releases at Rhino.com include Don't You Know Who I Think I Was, The Best of the Replacements, Depeche Mode, Speak and Spell, Music for the Masses, and Violator, all in deluxe editions, and Superman Returns, the original motion picture score, and on DVD, Mystery Science Theater 3000, Volume 9, South Pacific in Concert from Carnegie Hall, and The Who, Quadrophenia, and Tommy, live with special guests, available on separate single DVDs. Text the word croon to 74466 on your mobile phone to get official Frank Sinatra Jr. ringtones.
You've just listened to a Rhino.com podcast. Visit Rhino.com for music, movies, and all kinds of crazy shit.